and gavel in the action agenda for the Commonwealth Transportation Board meeting for today, October 19th. The first is public comments. Anyone like to make any statements? Ms. Tolson, folks could come on, start coming on up. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Chase with the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance. Again, I'd like to commend this group for your actions in terms of the corridors of statewide significance in general. This is something we've been talking about for a number of years, and I think that your actions in the last year or so have helped to greatly focus attention on some of the most critical needs in the state. With regards to the Northern Virginia North-South corridor, I think it's particularly important that we move forward as quickly as possible. Just to give you some numbers, in the last 10 years, the jurisdictions involved in this corridor, Loudoun, Prince William, Manassas, Stafford, Fauquier, not Fairfax, have added 300,000 people. That's not travelers or vehicles passing through. That's just residents. Okay, in the next 20 years, they're going to add over 650,000 more people. Whether we improve transportation or not, those are local government projections. Those aren't our projections. That's Council of Governments. That's Stample. So that's a million people in a 30-year period. That's the equivalent of adding another Fairfax County in Loudoun, Prince William, Fauquier, Stafford. I mean, clearly, and with the Dulles as the economic engine, there is a huge growing north-south demand. Every study that's been done for the last 30 or 40 years in this corridor has showed significant and growing north-south demand. So I would urge this body and whatever group is put together to focus on this corridor to act with a sense of urgency, because those million people, whether we do something or not, those million people are going to be there. And I would contend that by providing a better connected transportation network, the Commonwealth and the localities will be in a far stronger position to focus and manage growth than it will be if we leave the current system in place where things just spread out without any structure to consolidate behind. So, again, thank you very much, and we look forward to working with you. And, again, I would say this is not just the Alliance. I mean, every major business organization in Northern Virginia has endorsed this corridor. In surveys on various projects in this corridor, all show that these improvements are 60-70% approval by the public. So these are not controversial proposals. These are things that the public has long recognized the need for, and I think that the public in Northern Virginia will very much appreciate the attention that you folks are focusing on this important need. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'm going to hand off a couple of press releases and a letter. Those who weren't part of the transportation subcommittee or the rail subcommittee this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. My name is Danny Plugger. I'm Executive Director of Virginians for High-Speed Rail. Before you today, and going to be proposed a little bit later this afternoon, is going to be a resolution by Mr. Bowie and adopted by this board's rail subcommittee this morning. This resolution asks that the General Assembly create a dedicated funding source for the Virginia Intercity Passenger Rail Operating and Capital Fund. This is the largest issue facing Virginia's intercity and high-speed passenger rail program in the coming years. By October of next year, the funding to sustain Virginia's two very successful intercity passenger rail trains, the one out of Lynchburg and the one out of Richmond that's going to be extended to Norfolk, the funding will run out. By October of 2013, the funding for the other four additional trains, the two out of Newport News and the other two out of Richmond, will fall on the burden of the Commonwealth of Virginia. These six trains connect over 66% of the population of the entire Commonwealth of Virginia, and they represent over two-thirds of all the intercity passenger rail service currently serving Virginians. Furthermore, these trains over the last year have grown by 21.1% in terms of ridership. And then within stations of 5 miles of Virginia's colleges and universities, that growth is at 26% year over year during the last fiscal year. They also serve as the foundation of Virginia's high-speed passenger rail system. These six trains allow for Virginia to potentially get more trains in the future as our population growth in Virginia's urban corridors. So I'm going to ask you today to please pass this resolution when it comes before you later this afternoon. This is a very important issue. Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Hi, thanks for the opportunity to comment. My name is Kate Wofford. I'm director of the Shenandoah Valley Network. We are a nonprofit group working in six counties in the Northern Valley on issues of land use, transportation, and land conservation. And I was pleased to hear Mr. Kaywood's presentation, his emphasis on spot safety measures instead of wholesale widening in the I-81 corridor, because among the local groups that I work with and elected officials in the Valley, the final Tier 1 plan for 81, which was referenced in Mr. Kaywood's presentation, is broadly unpopular. There are concerns that the plan is unaffordable, estimated north of $11 billion we heard this morning. And while communities in the Valley are relieved that the tolling authority could be removed, switched over to I-95, that makes the huge plan unrealistic as there's no funding mechanism. And as limited funding does become available, it's spent on projects that are overbuilt, as they're built to the ultimate profile that's called for in that Tier 1 plan. And secondly, there are concerns in the Valley that the plan relies too much on a single approach, highway widening. As you know well, Norfolk Southern is building the Crescent Corridor project, estimated to take 1 million trucks off the interstate. Instead, in the Valley, there's greater support for a mix of strategies, which include continued investment in rail, road improvements at specific safety and congestion hotspots, improved local road networks, as most congestion occurs in municipal areas with local traffic, and better safety enforcement. So I would encourage you to consider amending the existing plan, the Tier 1 plan that Mr. Kaywood described, to reflect the needs of local communities along the interstate as well as the funding limitations. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Mr. Pollard.
Good afternoon. I'm Trip Pollard with the Southern Environmental Law Center. I want to touch on a couple of issues real quickly. First is good news about our rail ridership. Some of what Mr. Plotter mentioned touched on this, but Virginia, actually in the new Amtrak statistics that are out, has two of the three highest rates of increased ridership of any state-supported line in the entire country. So excellent news on rail ridership. It's a very positive story. Compliments to Ms. Drake as well as DRPT. This is a real success story. Obviously, funding is a big question going forward, and therefore I also would like to encourage you to adopt the resolution that was recommended by the Rail Subcommittee this morning. Secondly, I'd like to mention very briefly I-81, and second the comments from Ms. Wofford a moment ago. When you look at the issues and challenges on I-81, I think that Mr. Kiewicz's presentation did an excellent job of summarizing the challenges, but tended to cut more to a rather limited universe of the alternatives. And we really need a blend of options of targeted improvements, local street network improvements, as well as rail to address the very real problems that we have on I-81. So I would also encourage you to revisit and broaden what is today the state's plan, which is the record of decision in the I-81 study, to take into account.
Is it possible to ask a question, or would you rather not?
If you just let Lund finish,
okay.
Dr. Davis.
Okay. Also, I think in looking at that, it's important to take into account some of the new, more recent traffic data, which does show that the rate has not increased as quickly as it had in the past, which I think gives us time to try some of the more effective targeted solutions first. So I would just encourage you to take that broader focus. And then finally, I'd like to mention very briefly, touch upon the proposed Chapter 870 changes in land development provisions. You know, this board has made it a priority to better link transportation and land use. You talked earlier today about the need to revisit some of the assumptions about state taxpayers picking up the tabs for certain streets. The General Assembly did direct a review of these provisions, We believe, and actually I served on the Policy Advisory Committee, we spent a lot of time discussing traffic impact analysis changes. Most of those changes we are comfortable with. We reached consensus. Those are not before you today, but there are some concerns we have still going forward. In contrast, we spent hardly any time on secondary streets despite the importance of these improvements. We think that this proposal goes too far. We have not had much experience with these yet, and that we would urge you to, at the very least, require greater connectivity requirements and not go so far to weaken the sidewalk requirements. It's good for taxpayers, it's good for our communities, it's good for our mobility to encourage greater thoughtful connectivity. We think that the proposed changes are more extensive than warranted, and in light of the enormous challenges we face in financing transportation improvements, we think these would represent a step in the wrong direction. So we encourage you not to endorse the full menu of changes in front of you today.
Ms. Pollack, will you take questions?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I've heard the Southern Law Center comment many times about rail in the Shenandoah Valley, and I was just curious if the center has taken a position on having the Commonwealth build new tracks as a part of the solution. Has the center taken a position on something like that?
Just in general, do we support the Commonwealth building tracks?
Yes.
Funded by the state? Because you get into some constitutional issues as...
I'm not asking for a constitutional question.
Do we support the concept?
Would you support the concept?
We think it should be looked at in addition to... I mean, you've got... There's two questions that I hear in your question. One is...
That's very simple.
Should additional track be built? Should it be owned by the Commonwealth? So you get into very... I think much more complicated questions, which our Class 1 railroads are not happy with. I'm sorry.
Should it be built?
Should additional track be built? Yes. Should the Commonwealth build it? I think is the other question. Should the Commonwealth help fund it versus should we build it ourselves? I also heard in your question that's a much more complicated issue. I will point out, Dr. Davis, you mentioned earlier the lawsuit and the challenges that have been brought by communities about the state trying to proceed with the Crescent Corridor. And I'll point out that we filed an amicus brief in support of the Commonwealth of Virginia and argued in support of that project going forward.
Mr. Chairman, the only reason I ask the question is because I've sat through these hearings over and over and heard so many people ask for rail in the Shenandoah Valley. And every time I've asked, would you support rail, new tracks being built through your community, and would you support the Commonwealth paying for it? I get a different answer than I do when we ask the question, I'd like to have rail in the Shenandoah Valley.
Oh, I would answer yes to those questions the way you phrased it just then. And like I said, we went to the Supreme Court in support of Virginia on the proposal to build a multimodal station.
Okay. Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is David Dixon. I work for the Virginia chapter of the Sierra Club on transportation issues, and I suddenly came up with quite a menu of things to talk about. First of all, I would just echo two of the previous speakers and urge the board to adopt the resolution on funding for inner city rail operating expenses. It was not clear to, and switching subjects to the VTrans action plan, it was not clear to me from the, and I may have missed something, from the VDOT press release that the fall meetings were to address both the action plan and the six-year improvement program. Not that that's a bad thing, it just wasn't clear to the public, as near as I can tell. And then I'm going to really become part of the chorus here and talk about the secondary street acceptance standards and the fact that it seems like you're heading by approving those changes in a direction that's just opposite of what you're trying to do with the subcommittee on local maintenance needs. And I think that Mr. Rich probably laid out the arguments for that much better than I can, and I won't take up your time with that. Nor will I take up your time talking much about the apparently expanding plans for the Northern Virginia North-South Corridor. It looks like we are now definitely talking about a crossing, at least one. And again, I would play the chorus to Mr. Rich's comments on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone further? Mr. Fall?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Doug Fall. I'm with DuBerry & Davis. I've been involved in the design of subdivisions, streets, and subdivisions, mixed-use developments, planned communities for about 45 years. And I stand before you today asking that you adopt the revisions to the secondary road acceptance standards that have been drafted by the VDOT staff and that were the product of quite a bit of discussion and debate, if you will, by the Policy Advisory Committee, which the Highway Department asked me to serve on, not representing any particular group, including not my firm, but just because I've been involved in this for so many years. In fact, I've been involved in two other rewrites of these subdivision street standards, which are now being referred to as the secondary road or secondary street acceptance standards. When the law was adopted that mandated or that you promulgate regulations dealing with connectivity, what was really being discussed, and I say this because I know I was engaged and involved during the debate on the legislation itself, which actually the home building industry and people like myself in the design community supported, because we'd witnessed many times where we'd be in front of the governing body, like the Fairfax Board, have a development proposal, show stub street connections into an adjoining development that was already built, where the stub streets entered into this vacant property, and the citizens would rise up and they would say, well, we'll support the rezoning grudgingly if you won't connect to these streets that come out of our subdivision into this proposal. And the Board of Supervisors would sit there and go, yeah, okay, that's the answer. We won't connect it. And everybody would go away, no connections made. All along Braddock Road and Central Fairfax, Keene Mill Road, you can see examples of this. What this legislation was designed to try to fix was to the political problem, the political will problem of an unwillingness to connect one separate subdivision or development to another. It was not to try to ensure that there was all kind of interconnectivity of streets internal to the subdivision. In other words, the streets internal to the subdivision should be designed based on the lay of the land, streams locations, wetland locations, whether the terrain is more mountainous or whatnot. Somebody sitting back there next to me says, look at the picture that you've been looking at or I've been looking at all day long. You know, the idea of being able to design subdivisions on terrain like that in mountainous areas is requires a sensitivity that you get from years of experience. It is not something that you deal with a mathematical formula that tells you how many intersections and how many street segments that you can have in order to achieve some standard that was somewhat arbitrary in the first place. What I just described there was the connectivity index. You divide your street segments by the number of intersections. What it tends to force is more pavement internal to the subdivision. It doesn't necessarily ensure that you make the appropriate connections to the surrounding vacant parcels or even into the existing substreets that may come up to your property. And it doesn't necessarily ensure that you connect to the surrounding major thoroughfares in the right places or with the right number of connections. What it does do, it tends to force this additional amount of internal connectivity. Well, so what? What that is more pavement. Because things that could have been cul-de-sacs all of a sudden become extended streets. Now, I know there's apparently some negativity about some about cul-de-sacs. Cul-de-sacs have their place, you know. I mean, and you can't deny that. I mean, people want to live on them. Not everybody, but people want to live on them. So the point is that you've got to give the design community some flexibility. I think Mr. Garzinski said, and it's true, the layout or arrangement of streets is more of an art, or as much art, as it is engineering or science. Water in a pipe, we use formulas. Storm sewer, stormwater management, we can use formulas. It's closed systems. Then it reduces, you know, it works with mathematical formulas. Design and layout and arrangement of streets is not. I would urge that you adopt the resolution approving the regulations today. We've had a number of years in which to work with it. Unfortunately, not too many developments have occurred, but what I did is go back and look at a lot of previous developments, and in many of them in the chairman's backyard, in the Lytton Hall Road corridor in Prince William County, and determined that there were places where the index made it work and places where it didn't. But what was clear is that there was too much pavement added in many instances. That's maintenance costs. You're worried about maintenance costs. Well, if you continue to maintain all the secondary streets and subdivision streets remain secondary streets, you don't want to be having regulations that encourage more pavement, because that's just a potential long-term maintenance problem. It also adds to the capital cost, which gets passed on to homeowners. I know I've overstayed my welcome. I appreciate your patience, and I would urge that you adopt the regulations as presented to you by the VDOT staff. And thank you very much for your time.
Before he leaves, I think the gentleman made some very eloquent points. How do we, though, get these newer roads to connect better with the roads that the Commonwealth is paying a lot of money, you know, to maintain? And it could be a quarter of statewide significance. Let's say you have something on 29. But how do we make sure that connects well?
Well, first of all,
is there a way we can do this without a lot of bureaucracy or something? You know what I mean? That's what I'm concerned about.
The regulation requires that the developer or the engineer submit a plan, a sketch plan or a preliminary plan. That goes to the highway department as well as the locality. The locality, of course, is the ultimate approver of subdivision plans and site plans. But VDOT has an advisory role. They also have more than an advisory role, because at the end of the day, you know they got to accept the streets into the system, and they've got to issue the permits to allow you to connect to the existing streets. So they've got a lot of clout. They review this plan. The standards that are now in the proposed regs, which I believe you should adopt, do in fact provide for connections to adjoining properties. It says you will connect to the abutting properties. It indicates how many. And so there is a standard. We didn't do away with the standard just because we did away with the connectivity index. There's still standard, there's still a requirement, and there's still a review mechanism that's available to VDOT or the administrator's designee. And sitting there looking at the plan, if they're not happy with what Gary Garzinski presented, or his engineer, which is rarely me, by the way, would be, you know, I'm sorry, Gary. But if VDOT's not happy with the plan as presented, there's the opportunity to say, you know, you need to be connecting to this adjoining property.
But if you do away with the traffic impact analysis, how do you really know where you are? You're just kind of in the middle.
They're two different. I won't say they're not, that you can't find a relationship, but they're basically two different things. In the case of the layout and arrangement of streets, we're not debating whether the land use ought to be approved. We're not debating whether or not it ought to be 4 units per acre or 2 units per acre, or a floor area ratio of 0.5 or a 1.0. That's the decision that you make through the zoning process where the TIA becomes more relevant. Because I was going to overstay my welcome on this one matter. I'm not going to speak to that one, but they're really unrelated issues.
Well, you're always welcome, Mr. Powell, but we're going to give some other people.
Thank you very, very much for all your time. Appreciate
it. Anyone else have any other members of the public? Excellent. Thank you very much. At this point, we're going to have the minutes of September 21st.
Move it up. Second.
Any revisions, comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much. We're going to go now to financial planning. Mr. Lawson, this is about the Garveys. Anyone have any questions, concerns, comments? Mr. Lane? Would you like to make the motion?
Oh, I'll make a motion.
Yes, second. Any other comments? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. Now getting to the Transportation Mobility Planning Division. This is on the adoption of the secondary street acceptance requirements. Anybody have any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a quick statement. My employer has an active rezoning request before Fairfax County that may or may not be affected by these changes required by Chapter 870 and the regulatory changes we're discussing. So I just wanted to say I don't see there's a conflict of interest for me. I haven't sought or received any position from my employer about these questions. So I've satisfied myself that I don't have a conflict in this case, and so I will vote on the matter.
Okay.
And I'll submit a statement for the record.
Any other comments, questions?
I'll move for approval of this.
Second.
Second.
Do we have any discussion, comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, going to move on to local assistance on the economic. Economic Development, County, anything? Any questions, yes. Mr. Brule?
I have one question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
It's not specific to this, it's more general, but when we look at these economic development projects or assistance projects, the sort of way we look at them is they come along, as opposed to one versus another versus another versus another. How do we sort of weigh, assuming there's limited money, how do we sort of weigh one against the other if we just take them as they come? And I haven't run into it being a problem yet, but each time I do it, I'm like, well, what else is there out there that we'd like to do or that wants to be done that I don't know about? And I'm happy to vote for this one, but there may be a better one.
Mr. Chairman, I think he answered his own question. The fact there hadn't been a problem with the availability of resources to do it. As a matter of fact, there's usually been money left.
And we would consider, there hadn't been money with maintenance money, there hadn't been a problem with maintenance money going back a few years either. So as long as it's not a problem, I don't want to create one, Dr. Davis. I agree with you.
Brule, can you just like what goes into thinking about these issues?
The process for the projects is established in code and in the board's policy. As Dr. Davis pointed out, we haven't had an issue, particularly over the last 2 years with the economic downturn, with any scarcity of resources to fund the access road projects as they've come up. It's kind of, part of it is the nature of the projects. As they come up, the local governments are looking to stimulate the economy in their area and come to us in the format of this Lane County project as they're ready to be developed.
So if I want to do some economic development at the end of that 3 mile road, can I get the road repaired then?
What road? You can run the coal mine with the coal cars, can come right over to Lane First Point.
You're exempt forever. Your road isn't getting paid.
You're done. All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Davis.
Mr. Bowie?
Move the approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much. Programming Division, Ms. Mitchell, 6-year plan transfers.
I'm just bringing to you your normal monthly transfer list for your approval, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any giveaway cars to fleet?
There are no hybrid vehicles or
but there's two Jaguars.
Ms. Kane.
Question on the transfer out of the accounts. In U.S. 121 on the Pioneer branch, do we still need oversight on that project, and that would be the connector route? Is there some other way that will be handled, or what, in the Bristol district? Isn't that transferred to Section B?
Yeah, this was just a set of transfers where we were shifting some monies around so that we could make sure we could maximize the obligation of funds. So it's really not changing the total on the project.
Any other questions? You have a motion?
Move the approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much.
I just want to point out two information items that we said we would bring back to you. One is the ARA adjustments that were made, and the second one is the final bonus OA list, which has not changed from the list we brought you last month as recommendations.
This is info item.
Just
right?
Info.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Tyer.
On the VTrans 2035, just to clarify any misunderstanding, it's the action plan. It's the update that's going out for public comment. The action plan is just closing the loop on the previous legislation.
We have a motion.
Move the approval.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you very much. Second item is on the north-south corridor.
I have nothing.
The action.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ayes have it. Scheduling contracts.
Mr. Secretary, members of the board, we took 21 bids on September 28th. One is over $5 million, and I'm requesting approval to award that. You also have before you the two bids in the $2 million to $5 million range that were approved by the commissioner.
Do we have any questions? So we have the motion. We have a second.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, then we have new business. We have Mr. Bowie.
Mr. Chairman, I would offer a resolution that was approved unanimously this morning by the Rail Subcommittee.
Can I get a copy of that, please?
The last page in the book.
It's, I think. It's last item on the on.
Is it on
before?
No. Oh, okay.
It's also on your screen.
Have you made the motion, Mr. Bowie?
I haven't yet, but basically there are six regional trains that are operated by Amtrak in Virginia, two of them funded by Virginia, and these six trains serve 66% of Virginia's population. And the Commonwealth has invested in excess of $100 million. And the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act, adopted by Congress, will cut off any federal support for these and make it solely the state's responsibility after October 2013. The General Assembly adopted a Virginia Intercity Passenger Rail Operating and Capital Fund, but no dedicated source of funds for this. And this resolution would urge the General Assembly to provide sufficient dedicated funds from a new revenue source for the Intercity Passenger Rail Operating and Capital Fund so that the Intercity Passenger Rail service can continue. Would not attempt to tell the General Assembly what to do or how to do it.
No, you're down there.
But I think it's part of our responsibility to make the General Assembly aware of problems that we know about. And this is a very real problem that's forthcoming. So I'd move its adoption.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before I vote on this, I'd like to hear from Thelma Drake, whether she supports it or not.
We absolutely support this and appreciate you moving forward and telling the Assembly this is really an incredible need in the rail world.
Okay. I mean, we're actually out of money in a year, right, basically.
We would be looking at what service do we have to stop if we don't get funding, and that's not the goal in Virginia.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Mr. Schulman.
I just have a comment. In general, dedicating small revenue sources for specific purposes to me is not necessarily the best public policy. It locks you into a set of responsibilities and commitments that exist regardless of what the overall set of transportation needs may be and overall revenue picture may be. But in this case, given that incrementalism seems to be the only way that we're moving forward, I would say it's pretty responsible for this body to actually adopt this resolution. Furthermore, I think it probably puts the responsibility back where it belongs, and just this is the way to find out if the General Assembly actually supports this as one of the pieces of our transportation solutions or not. And I think that's one thing that we've missed in a large part of our discussions over these difficult years, is we actually haven't had a matching of words and deeds. So I think this is the kind of thing that we need to do to just find out exactly what the priorities of the Assembly are in terms of transportation and for deeds to follow words.
Mr. Chairman,
Spooley.
I failed to mention that this was brought to our attention by the Rail Solution Organization at our intermodal meeting early for our district in early October. And I appreciate the Rail Solution bringing this forward. It was submitted to Ms. Drake and to Mr. Page for their review, and they certainly fleshed out some of the premises that are involved here. And I thank them for their contributions, and I thank Rail Solutions for having brought it to our attention.
I just need to point out very clearly, though, the McDonnell administration is not taking any position regarding
right.
that.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Keene.
And this urgent need that we have in this arena, probably for each board member, represents and has contacts in each of the districts that can speak and address this need with people who have stakeholder in this issue. So that might be a responsibility as well as board members.
I want to make very clear that the McDonald administration regarding this resolution and or the actions that any member of the CTP takes regarding this resolution.
What does that mean?
I'll tell you later. I'll tell you later, Dr. Dan. Anything further? Yes, Mr. Peake.
I support the resolution and think it's a good resolution. I highly doubt that any action whatsoever will be taken during this upcoming General Assembly to dedicate any funds whatsoever to rail. And if that is the case, what does this board do going forward?
It comes out of our pot.
It's going to shut down the service, right?
Well, unless we...
The issue is 2000, federal fiscal year 2013, which is October 1st of next year. So
and you have the authority to take 10% off the top of the Transportation Trust Fund should you choose to do that.
And you all know how much extra money we got.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd throw that out, that there is an option.
We got all kinds of...
In fact, right after this, we're all going to go swimming in it.
Just thought I'd throw it out there.
Take our Garvey bonds that we just approved.
What's that?
Can we take all these Garvey bonds we just approved and...
What is going to be the practical act? What's going to happen? I mean, I don't want to speak for the whole board. I'd be surprised if everybody decides to pull the money off of the Transportation Trust Fund. So what's going to, what is the...
How are you going to protect the
What are we going to do? Just shut down the service? What's the practical outcome here?
Mr. Chairman, let's leave the conjecture to later.
Right.
I call for the question.
Okay. Yeah, any
Mr.
further
Chairman,
questions, comments?
All we're doing is...
All those in favor? Yes, Mr. Lauterbach.
Just one final point before we go on.
Yeah, but,
I truly am a supporter of rail, and I hope we can make that a viable option with increased ridership. But my concern is that when we commit to something, we also have to put ourselves in a position to be able to make the tough, hard choice in the future. We very well may get to the point that a line is not productive and have to make that decision to shut one down. And I think we need to keep that in mind. I mean, just we have to look at it from a business point of view, too. If it's not, we can't subsidize something heavily if it's not making a go of it. And as much as I would love to see rail become more predominant in the state of Virginia, we have to also face hard economic facts. And I mean, you know, and good business decision. So that's just the point I'd like to put in at the end.
Appreciate that, Mr. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Mr. Lawson, is there anything further new? Could you come up and speak to this? Explain what's going on? Does everyone have a copy of this other resolution that Mr. Lawson is bringing forward?
Yeah, you should have a resolution at your table related to the action taken last month related to the Virginia Infrastructure Bank. After the meeting last month, we initiated the APA process and solicited comments from you related to the guidelines and procedures. I received just a few comments from Mr. Rich related to the program, and I hope I've addressed those adequately in terms of what they were, what his concerns were related to the credit of the project, of the loans, and the quality of the project. When we initiated the discussions with the Department of Planning and Budget, their regulatory unit that handles the processing of the regulations, their first question was, why are you seeking a regulation? They weren't convinced that the material, the guidance document, as they referred to it, really was regulatory in nature, and that all we were doing was explaining how the legislation was being implemented. We followed up with the Attorney General's office. Mr. Allen is here today to kind of double check whether or not we felt that it was necessary to go that route And the decision was made that it wasn't, in fact, necessary to go through the APA process. So what the resolution today is asking is really just amending the very last whereas from the last month's resolution that asked the chairman to carry the guidelines and criteria through the APA process. So at this point, since it's no longer needed, the resolution before you now is just directing us to post the program criteria and guidelines as a guidance document to the town hall site, and then instructing the chairman to move forward with the presentation of the materials to the House Money Committees and Transportation Committee members as required by the legislation, and then to implement the program.
Move approval.
Second.
And then what we can do, we don't meet in November, so if we post this right away, I know there's some interest in getting comments, whatever. I think we should, after you post it, send it out, ask people for comments, and then we can try to have, I'd like to have, like, we talked about maybe having an information session on this as part of the workshop for the December meeting, and the perfect time for it is the transportation conference. We're going to have a lot of people there. Why don't we could even do it as a session or a separate session during the meeting. What's it? So what we'll do is, during the conference, I think we should just set aside an hour or something for you all to walk through for people the VTIP, the process, and what we're going to be doing. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Is there any other new business?
Mr. Chairman, just something very brief. Rich, we've all been reading about veterans coming back to this country and this tough economy. And I wonder if there's something that we could do as a veteran's preference or something to do about, I'm sure a lot of engineers, can we look into hiring some veterans that are qualified to work at VDOT and maybe veterans that are working for contractors that can somehow take that into account?
Yeah,
and just see what we can do about hiring some veterans that are coming back after having served the country.
Ms. Johnson around? She can walk you through. They have a very extensive program on hiring veterans, particularly
do we
veterans.
Hire them here for employees?
Yes, we do. And they've been very good about doing outreach on that. And so maybe next meeting, just do a very quick presentation about the veterans outreach that goes on.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller, then Mr. Elm.
When do you expect we'll get a draft schedule for the transportation conference?
We have one now. We can get it out to you. It's being coordinated by the ports as their host. And then next year, by the way, we've already been looking at or been contacted by some for Northern Virginia. So we'd like to do it up in Northern Virginia after this time.
What night are Mr. Miller's?
What night are we at his house?
That's where the special cocktail party is. I think it's going to be a little cold.
Yeah, that's right.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, I'd like to add to that on the veterans program. I'd also like Ms. Johnson to go over the DBE program as well, while we're doing that. Because one of the things we don't do is talk about things on the resource side a whole lot. We're mostly with operations, so I would request that some information be added about that as well.
She'll put you in a headlock and tell you about it.
Oh, I know about it. Just want to make sure everyone else knows about it.
I got the red marks over here. Dr. Davis.
Just want to thank you for the computer.
Oh, man, great.
Yeah, did we take these home?
Don't go anywhere with that computer. Man the doors, please. Lock all those and call the exit.
This is great.
Is there anything else? Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Meeting's adjourned.